Hi there, and welcome to the Grief and Rebirth podcast. I'm your host, author, and trauma survivor, Irene Weinberg, here to encourage you wherever you are in your healing journey. In each episode, I chat with incredible grief and trauma specialists, healers, mediums, and celebs, as well as remarkable people who have inspiring healing stories to share. If you're looking for a podcast that's both uplifting and inspiring, you've found it. Let us help you find your joy in life. Hi, everyone. I hope this finds each of you so very well. I'm speaking to you today from my studio in West Orange, New Jersey. Absolutely delighted to welcome Ginny Jablonski for the 13th inspiring interview in the Grief and Rebirth podcast Rebirth series. Ginny, who is a human and animal soul whisperer, a horse medicine facilitator, an author, an inspirational speaker, and an opioid crisis awareness advocate, will be speaking to us today from Prescott, Arizona. In 2001, Ginny retired from a career in international security to focus on resolving her emerging medical issues. In 2012, when a prescription opioid medication caused her lungs to stop working, Ginny had a profound near-death experience that brought her remarkable psychic abilities. She became motivated to go on an extensive spiritual journey of discovery, which led to a greatly heightened awareness of her body, consciousness, and energy field. And thanks to this heightened awareness, Ginny was able to overcome the debilitating effects of emotional and physical abuse, PTSD, and Lyme disease. Ginny, who can communicate telepathically with plants, animals, and the spirits of those who have crossed over, now combines her extensive knowledge, multi-sensory intuitive abilities, and shamanic principles to assist others. I'm looking forward to talking with Ginny about the near-death experiences that led to her profound healing, transformation, and rebirth. Her heightened psychic abilities that give her the ability to be a human and animal soul whisperer. How her horse Blue became the keystone to her healing herd of medicine horses. And her passion for promoting the evolution of interspecies consciousness through her new podcast. This interview is surely going to be an enlightening, healing, and transformative experience for all of us. Hey, Ginny, a warm, heartfelt welcome to Grief and Rebirth podcast.
Thank you, Irene. That was a very generous description of me.
Heartfelt. I was like blown away when I was learning about you. So let's begin our interview with this question. Tell us about those two profound near-death experiences and the remarkable psychic abilities you gained because of them. And the message from the animals you received during one of them.
Well, the first one, I was 3 months old. I had a whooping cough, or what's known in the canine world as Bordetella. And I had turned blue, packed in ice in a tent. The doctor said it wasn't looking good. And I didn't remember this all my life. It was like a spontaneous, regressive, somatic experience in an intuitive massage environment. And I went into the void, into the black, velvety nothingness. I didn't see anything. I didn't see light or a being. It was just the void. I shouldn't say just. It was everything. It was everything. And I heard a voice just booming and coming from all around me. And my perception of that voice is that it was creator, God, whatever you would call that. And I said, I can't do this life. Here I am. I'm coming home. And the voice said, no, you have to go back. And I fought back and forth several times. And I just said, no, you don't understand. It's going to be horrible. I'm going to be emotionally and physically abused. And there's going to be a lot of trauma. It's going to be very difficult. We fought back and forth 7 or 8 times. And the last time the voice said, I will make you stronger, and sent me back. So I didn't understand why, but my whole life inside of me, there was a very heavy sadness, and under that was an anger, but I wasn't quite sure ever who I was angry at. Now, my healing journey, of course, I realized I was angry at God for sending me back.
Wow, that's amazing. And your second one, which brought you all these psychic abilities and messages from animals, tell us about that one.
So that one was in 2012. I had been on prescription opioids, and I've told the story, you know, hundreds of times. You can find probably, you know, 50 or 60 interviews really quickly where I talk about it. About a year before that near-death experience, my horse Blue was placed in a sanctuary because I was declining in health and we had to sell everything and move into the city so I could be closer to the doctors. So I still went back to visit him. One day when I was visiting him, I was with him and I turned around and there were 13 horses lined up in a semicircle and my consciousness left my body and went to a place where on the other side of the veil where there were a lot of animals. And I was told, you're going to die. Don't die. We have something important for you to do.
Wow.
And I didn't, you know, understand really what was happening. And when I came back in my body, you know, I sort of looked around like, did anybody else see that? Did anybody else witness that? Because who would believe that experience that I had? So less than a year later, I died. I went to sleep and the fentanyl caused my brain to forget to tell my lungs to breathe. So you earlier had described that you had a mini near-death mm-hmm. experience because you didn't, in your conscious memory or in any memory that you've had brought back to the surface, you don't remember going across the
right. Veil.
Well, I guess you could describe mine as a mini near-death experience because I don't recall going through a tunnel or really going very much further than being propelled into a white space. No ceiling, no floor, no walls, a beautiful green deciduous tree in front of me, and a man that looked very much like the Christian version of Jesus walking toward me. And he said, you've suffered enough, come with me. And I reached out my hand and I could feel my fingertips touching his fingertips. And I was like, oh, yep, that makes sense. I'm taking a lot of medicine. Oh, yeah, I'm gone. And it's not the first time in my life, in my adult life, that I thought that I was dying either. So there's been some other interesting things. But so I said, of course, makes sense. And as my fingers were slipping across Jesus's fingers, I heard a commotion behind me. And I turned my body around and there were the horses and donkeys from the sanctuary where Blue was, my horse Blue. And they were screaming. They were up on their hind legs. The donkeys were braying, making loud noises. The horses were whinnying and screaming. And I could hear in a human voice, don't go, don't go. Don't you remember? There's something important you have to do. And without even thinking, I just whipped back around and I said, sorry, Jesus, I'm going with them.
Oh,
and I just came back in my body so quickly and immediately regretted it because my lungs were on fire. I had been gone for a while. My heart had stopped, probably had some sort of heart event and had a few little mini strokes, I think, at the same time.
Oh, my God. And
yeah. So that's why the left side of my face is a little droopy. Try to draw my face on a little more symmetrically.
You look fine to me, Jenny. You look beautiful to me.
Oh, thank you. And I just woke up. And when I could finally catch my breath, you know, I just screamed 20 or 30 times at the top of my lungs. I just died. 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 I just over and over screaming as loud as I could. And I just woke my husband and frightened him. And that led me on a journey to realize that if I wanted to live, I needed to get off of the prescription opioids. And that's another conversation that we might be able to have at another
right.
time because
oh my God.
I had quite a lot of information about what happened to me when I was working with the doctors trying to get off of the fentanyl and the doctors weren't that supportive, just so you know.
I'm not only talking about through this podcast traditional healing methods, but a lot of alternative healing methods and they really don't understand. They really don't because they're trained in a certain way and they don't understand that it's okay to be outside the box. Sometimes that helps a lot, you know? Yeah, totally understand that. Then you had, after you got off the opioid medication, the fentanyl and all of that, you had this spiritual journey of discovery to try to heal yourself. That, and you used a lot of holistic methods, alternative methods that led to a significantly heightened awareness of your body, your consciousness, your energy field. So what questions within you, the spiritual journey of discovery answer? Tell us what you did. I mean, I think you did acupuncture. What modalities did you?
Oh, I tried everything from quantum healing to, you know, psychics and mediumships and Akashic records and intuitive physical therapists and a lot of past life work and, you know, breathing and anything I could do with my body, which was very little because I had been bedridden for more than 10 years.
My God, Jenny.
When I woke up from that, I could see dead people, hear consciousness. I didn't understand what was happening to me because I never was exposed ever to any spiritual philosophy or religious philosophy beyond Christianity. So it was all very crazy making to me. And I had majored in economics and my husband majored in engineering and also computer science. And, you know, he was, I guess, what one would have called at that time an atheist. So we both just thought, well, it's the drugs. But it wasn't the drugs because I knew what was happening to people. I could hear their inner voice when they spoke with their mouth and their physical voice. It wasn't congruent with their heart and their soul and their body was saying something different. And I could see all of the human energy constructs, the subtle bodies, the meridians, the chakras. And I could even see the nervous system like a vast golden superhighway with these little tiny crystalline, almost like hard drives that have now been discovered and books written about them. There's one written by Stuart Hameroff talking about microtubules. And when I discovered that book, I was like, yes, that's what I see. And all the information is stored in these little tiny nanoparticulates of crystals in the microtubules in our nervous system. And that's how our body expresses what our mind has not processed. And I was trying to explain this to people and it, you know, Gabor Mate and Peter Levine and Stephen Porges were, you know, really popular back then yet. It wasn't something that was really widely discussed or available. And the internet was just kind of new back then, you know. So it took a while for all this information to get out. But the more I was able to meet people and find out about some of the quantum physics theories and other alternative views, which frankly have been scientifically proven for 100 years, but it's just not discussed because it's called pseudoscience or what have you. But that it was very crazy making. I could see all of this and I didn't understand it. So I had to go on a journey of education or what I call remembering because I already knew all of this. I just didn't remember, right? And when I went to the classes or took part in the modality, that last time I came back from the near-death experience, it was as I had to have gone somewhere because it was as if I had a direct line of connection to my higher self. Some people call it the oversoul, the monad, the part of me that exists outside of time. And this is really, I think, the crux of my journey, my message, my experience is that I had completely forgotten the truth of who I was, am as a spirit in a body, as an infinite soul, as an infinite being of light, completely forgotten.
Which is what most of us do. When we're born, we lose that memory, right? We forget.
Exactly. But all of the trials and tribulations I went through in my life that were meant to send me on a seeker's journey, you know, I was stuck in the first quadrant of the hero's journey, just the suffering, and dark night of the soul. And then I go back to the beginning and suffer, and have another dark night of the soul.
You never kept moving, right? And now you're in this journey and you're starting to move forward.
Yeah.
And you're getting insights. And what are the insights telling you?
Well, it was very slow going at first because my experience was that I went to a lot of healers that didn't really understand what they were doing. They didn't have a sense of really what was appropriate to help a person on their spiritual journey. And I think metaphysical healing and alternative healing has been sort of normalized. And so when we go into the practice or we come into the community and we're a newbie, we just accept that this phenomenology is normal. It's appropriate. You know, the give me $500 and I'll heal you exchange, right? And there wasn't a lot of, I have information that will help you on your journey,
right?
Help you to see what you are unable to see, or help you to understand, or give you another context or another perspective of something that you haven't been able to see. And this will help you continue down the path it was more just lay there, be quiet. I'm going to tell you what's wrong with you. I'm going to fix you. And almost every
today,
time
you have today, you have more people who are definitely healing the way you said. They'll tell you this is what's happening. This is why they seem to be more tuned in. And I think that when this happened to you was around the time when I was coming out with my book where people thought it was crazy. Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Really, very similar.
Right. So I wasn't learning a lot in the beginning. Everybody I went to, they had all the answers. Everybody else was wrong. I had to do it their way. But what I was seeing and perceiving and what that my higher self on the other end of the phone line was telling me, okay, so now look inside yourself and do you see what they're talking about? Now I'm going to explain to you why this is there. This is an emotion or this is a belief system or this is an unhealed wound from a past life or this is an absolute misunderstanding from when you were a child and your little psyche misinterpreted something. Whereas there was always an attempt to oversimplify or invalidate or make wrong or what have you. And that was my experience. And I think I had to have the experience I had in order for me to get where I am with the perspective that I have today, which is I don't invalidate people. I don't tell people they're wrong. I don't tell people I know more than them. I know nothing about you or anybody else. And I listen to the person's soul. So very, very few people, in fact, almost nobody for years ever said, this is what your soul is telling me. It would always be their guide. And their guides were condescending or laughing or thinking things were, you know, ridiculous or choices.
So they were coming from their egos. They weren't really coming from a healing place.
Yeah. And so what I saw over and over was healers who were traumatized, who found out they had a healing gift, who wanted to put out a shingle and quit their day job because they couldn't stand being with people anymore. And they wanted to heal everybody else and really not heal themselves. They didn't know how to ground. They didn't know how to clear their energy. They didn't know how the psycho-spiritual apparatus worked. They didn't understand. They weren't channeling their higher self. They were channeling the beings that were standing behind them. I saw a lot of that, a lot of that. And I think that's why my journey unfolded the way it did, so that I could see things to then check myself. Is this happening to me? Yeah, of course it is. You know, okay, so how do I address this within me? So rather than say, oh, somebody else has a problem, it was always, no, your outer world is a reflection of your inner world. And that higher self on the other side of the phone, you know, was always saying, look inside. This is why this is happening. This is why this is here. Please understand this goes much deeper. You know, my experience was when people said they were energetically healing me, I would walk to the car and it would come right back. Because they didn't have buy-in from my soul. They were literally violating my physical body, my energy field, and my soul.
And you were being allowed to see this. You were getting your own education.
Yeah.
What was authentic and what was not.
Yeah. I never complained. I never went back and told people, you know, oh, you're wrong or you're doing it. Or that's not my business. You know, my business was my healing journey. And a lot of that really informed who I am today. And another reason that I kept going was because I would be taught a protocol, if then, or step one, step two, step three. And if this is the case, then this, you know, here's the solution. And I would say, but that's not what that soul is asking for, or that's not what the consciousness of that body doesn't feel safe. Or if you do this, it's too much for the nervous system. You need to stop. And I was constantly being told, oh, you're just naive or your information is incorrect, because they couldn't see, they weren't getting information directly from their higher self.
They were not getting it right.
And I went to great expense and time to ensure that I wasn't doing the same thing other. So I basically, my husband said, here's my life savings, go do whatever makes you happy, you know, go on your journey. If you want to live, I want you to live. And I did spend my husband's life savings. So I was able to find people that really understood what was going on with the energetic construct and work with, you know, shamans who were very integrous and who could walk on both sides of the veil and who could understand me. And it took a while. It took a while. And of course, as a human, I was always looking outside of myself, no matter what, always looking outside of myself for the answer. Somebody else would have the answer, looking up to someone as a guru or a teacher. And then just really being disappointed time and time again, because you begin to idolize someone and then you just realize, well, we're all just human, you know.
But you did get help with some shamans, right? It sounds like.
Yes, I studied with a couple of shamans, but the most pivotal experience for me was when I went to Australia and worked with an Aboriginal woman. She brought everything into context for me. And she said, you know, you're amassing a lot of information, but you're not evolving. You're not growing. You're not learning. You're not expanding your perspective. Here's why.
Wow.
The information is being offered to you almost as a form of entertainment. You know, reading the records doesn't necessarily tell people why it happened that way, why, you know, or saying that someone has a soul agreement. That's not just the end. Oh, you have an agreement. Now you have to abide by that agreement. Well, why was the agreement created? Was it really truly soul's unfinished business? Was it judgment? Was it, you know, a misunderstanding? Is it a holdover from a past life? You know, there was a lot more. And this amazing Aboriginal woman helped me to understand how to employ the information to affect healing, to affect, let's say, releasing the patterns that I carried with me, the unfinished business of my soul.
That's amazing. And that's what you do now to help other people,
yes.
Right? That's about, and you're not the first person who's told me. I've interviewed someone else who, a pivotal healer who works with the Aboriginal system of healing. And it's amazing. Really, really impressive and amazing and real. So now you're a human and animal soul whisperer. So, and especially you work with rescued and traumatized animals utilizing this. And so the animals got together and said, you have to come back to help us, basically.
Right.
Right. So tell us how you utilize this animal communication, intuitive work, and hands-on healing modalities to help these traumatized animals.
Mm-hmm.
Which a part of your real purpose, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't really use hands-on healing modalities so much. I am certified in shiatsu massage for both human and animals. And I did, in order to have some certification, some name for, you know, I went to the Healing in America in Ojai, California, and got certified in holistic healing and Reiki, but I didn't accept the symbols because most of the healing modalities that I went to learn, I chose never to go to the advanced level, and I just sort of had my name removed from the websites because I felt like they were very limiting. And they, in my mind, they were perpetuating myth of the past about what the soul is or what the human is or what human consciousness is capable of or not capable of. So what I do is I work with an animal or a person, and the animals did ask me. You know, on my journey, everybody told me from the get-go, you're a healer, you're bringing through such incredible information. You need to be a healer. You need to be doing this for a living. Can you help my friends? Can you help my clients? And I said, no, I have so much trauma from this life. And I've seen other people working in a capacity as a healer and it not working out so well for them. So let me go on my own healing journey and try to understand more of what's happening to me. And then in the context, the greater context, humanity, and maybe then I will be interested in doing that. And eventually I just was willing to give messages. And when I started giving messages to people, all of a sudden their animals, alive or dead, started coming into the sessions. Well, that bothered me because I didn't remember my near-death experience after that day. I had forgotten that piece of it, the piece about the animals. Because getting off of the opioids was really traumatic in itself. In case
my goodness.
Yeah.
What you have been through, holy moly.
Yeah.
I have to say right in the middle of this interview, I give great kudos. You've got a great guy there.
Thank you. Oh, my husband. Yeah, he's wonderful.
Oh my God, what a wonderful man that is to be so supportive of you through all that you've been through.
Yeah.
I love you so much. It's so amazing.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Now he says, well, this is my piece, I'm doing my work and contributing to humanity by supporting you, but
that's what he is.
We never had this conversation, you know, before when I was sick and he was bringing me three meals a day and taking care of the ranch and having a full-time job. And then after my near-death experience, he supported anything. If I wanted to go travel for 3 months, which I did many, many times, not coming home for 3 or 4 months at a time. Just traveling, sometimes not even knowing where I'm going, just getting up in the morning and my higher self telling me, go here, look up this person on the internet, go visit this, go meet these people, go to this mountain, go, you know, and I just did whatever my higher self told me to do. And my husband supported it. He is a wonderful, wonderful man.
He is amazing. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. It's almost like, you know, I talk about the soul and I have this divine plan and he's working with me from across the veil. Your husband is working with you in this lifetime now to support you.
It's very clear that he's my support team in this life. Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. So when you work with traumatized animals, you hear their souls, you help them to heal.
Yeah. Well, let me quickly follow up real quick. So I was working with the people and the animals started coming in. And I thought I was entertaining their requests, and they would give messages helpful for the people or helpful for them, clearing up misunderstanding, bringing messages of love, sometimes asking for healing. And I just did whatever I would do for a human, for the animal. And then one day I meditated and I said, this is really bothering me. Why are the animals bothering me? Now I'm really trying to do something important here and help people. And that's when my primary guide and this council of animals and all the horses came in and said, don't you remember? We're the ones that saved you from your near-death experience. We brought you back and we guided you on your journey to all these various places and healing modalities and to meet all these incredible people. And now you're going to take everything you learned on your journey about human consciousness and trauma and the energy field and how it all interacts. And you're going to apply it to the animals because nobody's talking about animals as sentient beings, or far too few, let's say. People are discussing that. And we need help too, because we're traumatized too. And we have thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And we are struggling to be self-aware because humans don't want to let us be self-aware. And I just kind of said, are you sure you're picking the right person? You know, yeah, I'm not an animal communicator. Like, why are you picking me?
And what did they say?
Don't worry, it's all going to work out. So a year later, something remarkable happened. I was woken in the middle of the night and told to go to San Diego. And I said, no, I'm not going to San Diego. Went back to sleep, woken up again, go to San Diego. No, I don't know anybody in San Diego. I just thought it was something bothering me, you know? So the third time I was like, oh, fine. I'll wake up now. I'll never go back to sleep. And I turned on my computer and sure enough, there was a fire in San Diego where 1,000 horses were displaced and 900 horses were in one place. And I heard, so you going to San Diego now? Yeah, I guess so.
Wow.
So I went to San Diego and volunteered with a lot of the people that were displaced from the fire. And due to Instagram and Facebook and, you know, all those fun social media platforms, within months, I had like 200 animal communication clients. So I just became an animal communicator overnight. Now, that's not to say that I didn't go take animal communication classes and animal healing modality training, none of which resonated with me. It was all very limiting. It was people that made it up themselves because their dog talked to them or their cat talked to them or their horse, you know, talked to them from the other side. So they were getting the perspective of one being talked to them and said, this is how the universe works. And so they created a modality or their communication with their dog or what have you. These people were not going out studying different philosophies and talking to a bunch of different people and having different experiences in different contexts with different symbolism and different mythology and different story. And, you know, it was very, very clear that it was almost a religious belief the way they were putting it forward. And so almost none of it resonated with me. And I was always getting more information. And it was the same thing as with me. And the human perspective was, it's not what the soul needs. You know, they're not honoring the soul and they're not honoring the layers of trauma, their survival instincts, the mental, the subconscious constructs that are creating some of the issues, and then the unfinished business of the soul, what some people call judgment, some people refer to as karma. So I just realized if I was going to do my thing, I couldn't hitch my star to anyone's wagon because I was here to help us remember the way it used to be. We all used to be shaman. We all used to have access to wisdom. You know, we all used to be able to talk to our higher selves. Now, did I go on that journey organically and sort of, you know, work my way up through the ranks? No, it was gifted to me through a near-death experience. And I certainly don't know why I was chosen, other than that I have a very compassionate and ancient soul who's been around for a long time and who's here for this amazing time of transition and evolution on the planet. And I call it the great remembering, you know, remembering that we all have these abilities in, you know, all of us have all of our psychic senses, or as they say in the East, the cities, and these abilities. So that's really how it happened. And I work with animals the same way I work with people. I don't know anything. Nothing that I have ever learned, nothing cognitive, nothing intellectual comes into play. No amount of information, unless I'm asked to say, tell them about something. They might be interested in a book, or maybe this supplement or plant medicine will help. But very, very rare.
You're getting information right from the source.
Yeah. Well, you're information from their source.
From their source, from their souls, and they're communicating with yours.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The consciousness of their body, the consciousness of their energy field and their subconscious mind, their programs, their patterns, their belief systems, and their soul, both the part that is in the body personality, and the part that is held at the eighth chakra above the head, the soul star chakra that has not incarnated. So to me, that is the purest information, is when you're actually getting it from them. And so I have a lot of boundaries set up around the way I work, a long list of I will not, I will not, I will not, I will not. And so sometimes I think I even limit my own ability, but at least I know I'm in this very narrow
lane. You feel safe within that. You feel safe in what you're doing.
Yeah. And my lane is just that. It's a lane. And there's a lot of remarkable people with a lot of remarkable gifts, which I don't have. My lane is building a bridge to higher consciousness, helping the body and the body personality mind remember that they have a soul that they can connect to. Because just like people have forgotten, so have many animals forgotten, especially domesticated animals. So my very narrow lane is building that bridge and helping them remember. And I don't want to say reconnect, because it's not true that we're ever disconnected. It's the trauma that gets in the way. It's the all the dirty laundry that doesn't allow us to see beyond, right? And it's the nervous system, the 40 miles of nerves in the human body that hold all of that information in the nanoparticulates of crystals in the microtubules. All of that information is held there. And that includes this life, it includes pre-birth memories, it includes past life memories, and it includes a lot of stuff that doesn't even belong to us, but we've taken on either through the mirror neurons in our neurology or through just absorbing from our culture, our society, what we were taught, et cetera.
I want to ask you, you have a healing herd of medicine horses? Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. I'm sure there are people listening to this who do not know what a medicine horse is, let alone to have a healing herd. And your horse Blue became the keystone.
Yes. Well, after my near-death experience, we got my horse Blue back from the sanctuary, and we took four other horses with us as well. Yeah. So Blue was a difficult case. He was my vaquero horsemanship project, you know, 16 or 17 years ago, and he could not be contained. You could not tie him. He would not be controlled. And so anybody else would have euthanized him. You know, he was a $100,000 horse when he was a foal, and he was bred to break the world's high jump, the world record. That was the plans that they had for him, but he would not be controlled. So my thought that I was going to control him and I would be a successful vaquero horseman and use him as my project never really happened.
But what is that word, vaquero? A vaquero horseman?
Well, it's another kind of horsemanship that was popular in Mexico. Well, it's not just popular. It's a very refined, very high level form of horsemanship that involves training to create a very sensitive, very compliant horse, which I no longer agree with. But I thought at the time it was really before the days where natural horsemanship was really popular. And so that's what my husband and I fell into. We had a lot of bad experiences with other types of horse training. So we wanted to try to do something that was different than the very competitive world of dressage or, you know, ranch competition, that type of thing. So what he taught me was the value of me being grounded and in my body and present and honoring him and listening to him, which is the exact opposite of vaquero horsemanship, right? So over time, after my near-death experience, we got him back and some other horses. And that's what my husband and I do, is we take other people's unwanted performance horses or injured, and we bring them, you know, and give them a cush life, and they get osteopathic and chiropractic and massage and animal communication and whatever they want, you know. But I don't force it on them, and they get to choose. They get to choose. And they tell me when they don't like something or someone, that's for sure.
They know. They know.
Yeah. But from my perspective, so a medicine horse is, well, there are a couple of avenues that we could use to describe. First, the scientific definition of a medicine horse is a horse who has what they call the mutant X gene. And Secretariat is the horse best known for this, that has a very large heart, a heart that is larger than any other horse. And a horse's heart is often up to 10 times larger than a human heart. So I might have that wrong. It might be 4 to 5 times, and the energy field is 10 times larger. Right. Okay. I apologize. I may have misspoken. I'm not in that mind frame. I'm kind of channeling from my soul right now.
Right.
And it's hard to pick out pieces of history. And so what happens when a human stands in the energy field of a horse, their heart has a stronger, larger electromagnetic field. And what we know is that the person with the strongest frequency wins. So if you walk into a home and somebody's violent and angry, you may become entrained to that frequency and your heart rhythm may become very incoherent. So when we walk into a horse's energy field, we become entrained. Our heart rhythm matches their heart rhythm.
Oh, how interesting.
It's called heart rate variability. The coherence is the gap or the space in between the heartbeats. And if you have a similar gap or space in between each heartbeat, you have what is scientifically known as a coherent heart rhythm. When humans stand in the energetic field of a horse, we begin to shift out of the sympathetic nervous system into the parasympathetic nervous system. And people magically attribute that to the horse as if somehow they are healing you or they have the power to heal you, when in fact it's biophysiology, it's electromagnetic energy. And what that does when we shift into rest and digest, when we are more calm and less chaotic, we can hear our own consciousness. There's a greater potential for us to hear from our own soul, our own guides, messages, and feel our own love and, you know, the truth of who we really are. But then as soon as you step outside of the horse's electromagnetic energy field, then you go back to your normal rhythm. So there's that.
I would imagine even in human situations where you come into someone's electromagnetic field, and if it's a very peaceful environment, you feel very peaceful. Or like you said, if it's a hostile environment, you may take that on. But when you leave it, you go back to, it may have affected you for a little while, but you go back to who you are, right?
Well, for the most part, I think it can be a little more complicated than that, but yes.
Yeah.
And then the second piece of a medicine horse herd is that, you shared with me your experience of you and your friend working with a brilliant intuitive woman, as well as horses who were expressing their mm-hmm. gifts. And so some horses, not all horses, have these psychic gifts and abilities to communicate and abilities to read people's field and know what's going on with them. And so Blue and a couple of other of my horses had those abilities as well.
Amazing. So when you are working with someone, you can bring them to one of your medicine horses, right? And they can help them also. They intuit things to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes. I mean, I do not have people to my home on a regular basis, but my horses will chime in. My donkeys will chime in. My dogs will chime in. And the wisdom from the animals is very profound. And they each have different gifts, just like humans have different gifts as well.
That's so interesting. And I wanted you to please explain your new understanding of the phrase healer as teacher, which is a powerful form of self-empowerment that promotes self-awareness, which you call compassionate wisdom.
Yes. Well, my soul basically told me that I was never going to be a healer unless my definition of healer was to help people understand that we are our own best healers, to empower others. And so that's the term compassionate wisdom, which was coined by a mentor of mine, G.W. Hardin, who's a mathematician and quantum physicist buff. And he talks about compassionate wisdom, which is very much in alignment with healer as teacher, which means you respond to inquiry. You don't just randomly walk up to someone and start giving them all the answers or go into their energy field and start adjusting things as if they were a car to be maintained or to be fixed. You know, we're not tools. We're sentient beings. We're living, breathing beings. And each of us are here for unique reasons. Each of our souls have a very unique soul purpose and soul passion and potential. And
wait, can we stop you right there? That's so important for our listening audience to know. So every single one of us and every single person who's listening to this podcast and every single person on the planet comes here with a specific job to do in a way or a specific purpose, right? And how would you explain that?
I was just going to say, to be fair, some people are here, you know, on vacation in this life.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, you know, we're not really learning lessons. We're just enjoying life.
Wow. And there are people who do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a thing. It's a thing. And sometimes there are people here just sort of earth angels, you know, they're just holding the light for the rest of us to sort of fumble around and figure out what we meant to do. And some of us never actually get to that. And that's okay too. You right. know, we all get to make our own choices. But when someone comes to me and says, you know, I have a problem, or can you solve my problem? The answer that they will get from me is, here are the things preventing you from solving your own problem. Here are the limiting beliefs that you might never have thought of that are underpinning this self-sabotage or the sense of unworthiness or that you don't deserve something. Or for many people, including myself, there was an element of self-hatred and unforgiveness of self or anger at God. So
that's fascinating.
If we can get to some of those underlying belief systems, and not only that, our souls made choices, and many of our souls made choices to experience fear in different forms, you know, fear of being alone, fear of being wrong. And sometimes we don't realize that the way to remember that is to stop and question, well, I've been at the effect of this all my life. I wonder if my soul's had enough. Nobody
in other words, as a motivation, you can feel this and then you can go to a place where maybe I have to heal that or work on that or figure that out. Right. You're bringing that back to address it again and again until you got the lesson.
Right. And we can ask our soul, we can ask our higher self, have we experienced this enough? You know, and 9 times out of 10, when I ask someone's soul, they say yes. And I've even had people's souls say, in fact, I think I bit off more than I can chew. So let's tick a few more things off the list, you know, because it just, the frequencies are changing. Our potentials are really opening up for all of us and what we can accomplish here on the planet. And I think a lot of the normal sort of hoops that we might have had to have jumped through if we were going to dedicate 20 lifetimes to learning one lesson or something like that, you know, which the Hindus and the Buddhists will say, no problem. I have the rest of eternity to figure it out. You know,
right.
Some of us are a little bit anxious to get on with the show.
Yeah, it's enough. It's enough. It's enough. We have. Which brings me to, you have this podcast about the evolution of the interspecies consciousness. And I'd really like to know about that. And you also made the comment that we are evolving as a planet. I mean, the planet has a soul too. People who are listening to this are going to say, Jenny, but look at all this chaos and look at all this stuff that's going on. What do you mean we're evolving and this is going on? So can you talk to us about all of this?
Well, my perspective is more each of us individually are either choosing to grow and evolve, or we may not be consciously choosing to grow and evolve, but we're being put through the paces anyway. And some people are definitely going kicking and screaming, you know. But I tend, because I'm not a philosopher and I'm also not a geopolitical scientist or an expert in world affairs, I tend more to look just at individual soul experience and what's going on with us individually. So if you don't mind, I'm not able to answer the question about the chaos in the world, other than I feel that it is a sign of a great shift to come, that our society must at some point, the way we have known it, will, it must collapse in some way to be reborn, as is the title of your podcast, Rebirth.
Right, Rebirth.
And I think we are about to be rebirthed, not only in our societies, but as humanity, as one humanity, to remember many, many great things about ourselves. And by great, I mean broad and fantastic and magnificent things about ourselves and what we are ultimately capable of. And by capable of, I mean love and compassion and no more competition, no more judgment, you know, kindness and choosing kindness and self-awareness and self-responsibility. No more being a victim, no more being a martyr. I mean, certainly souls can choose that. I don't know anybody who's consciously waking up in the morning and making those choices. I think that more people, especially in industrial societies such as ours, where we're, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, stressed out, we're not taught, you know, yogic principles. We're not taught, we don't read the Upanishads or the Vedas or the Mahabharata or the, you know, mostly, or the Bible for that reason, or any of the other great historical works, religious works. We're not necessarily brought up in a society that is very spiritual or very self-aware esoterically. And I think more than ever, people are recognizing, wow, this, the way we've been doing it just isn't working. And we need to spend more time, whether it be breathing, doing Qigong, yoga, mindfulness, or what have you, and healing our trauma so that we can get out of these looping patterns, whether it be thought or actions or, you know, life experiences, we want to be set free. Just like the animals tell me all the time, we learn through love and forgiveness and reclaiming our balance. We're not learning through the trauma and the drama. And I think humans are at the point now where we are saying, we've had enough of that and we're ready to shift. And so forgiving and releasing judgments and those types of things, I think, are what are setting us on a really beautiful evolutionary path. And I see that individually with the people I work with every day.
It reminds me of the message I got when they pulled me out of the car, be loving and kind to everyone. And I took that also to mean that meant to me too. And wouldn't, what a world this would be if we were all just loving and kind to each other, right? Tell me about your podcast. What would you like everyone to know about it?
So it's called Interspecies Evolution. And the purpose is to explore our human consciousness and self-awareness as a nexus between our understanding of animals as conscious and self-aware, as sentient beings as well. And so it's a podcast that explores human consciousness and healing and self-awareness and speaks very clearly to the topics that we discussed today in ways that are healthy to understand our humanness, our human psyche, our triggers, our emotions, what is really at the root of it, you know, soul choices, unfinished business, karma, judgment, and those types of things. And to really put in context what's happening to us, to always look within so that we can then honor the animals as sentient beings. It's a pretty esoteric podcast.
Yeah, it sounds like very profound, very deep, transformational with the messages. You're a pioneer in a way. You're forging the road, the path. Jeannie, what are your tips for finding joy in life with all that you've been through? What would you like to tell everyone about this life they're going through, who they have it? And that's another podcast for the opioid thing and all the stuff that you went through. But what really brings you joy? Is it working with your animals? Is it with all you've been through? Just what's your tip? What's the Jeannie tip?
Well, so because my experience was living in total forgetfulness, absolute ignorance and disconnectedness, I find joy in helping people to see beyond that. Helping to empower people, helping people become self-aware, giving simple tools. You don't have to study for a decade. You don't have to go be a karma yogi for 3 years before you can even talk to the Rinpoche or what have you. You know, And I'm mixing Hinduism and Buddhism there, but you, you understand what I'm saying.
On this podcast, they're all welcome.
Everybody's welcome. That's right. And that's the interesting thing is I have found in all of the religious perspectives I have studied, the common thread is loving kindness, joy, and peace, and compassion, and being kind to ourselves. So what brings me joy is helping people remember simple tools that we can use through self-inquiry to be more self-aware, to understand where our thoughts are coming from, what is creating the emotion within us, where are our unprocessed memories, our unhealed wounds held in the body, and how can we use esoteric tools, our own mind, our own consciousness, our own intention, how to release these things. And it's when I see the light bulb go off for people, when I meet beautiful, you know, 65, 70 year old man from Texas and one from Denmark, you know, get on Zoom with me and say, I've just had a very decided lack of unconditional love in my life. And what do I do? Bringing some joy to people like that, that's really amazing. And so my soul basically said to me, started guiding me about a year and a half ago to do the podcast. And first it was change some language on my website. And then it was start thinking about a podcast. And then it was heal yourself more so you can express your voice, because that was a huge issue for all of us, you know, speaking our truth and talking about these concepts, which in the past have made us come to unfortunate ends, right? Yes. Oftentimes. Yes. And my soul basically said, this is my love letter to humanity. This podcast is a love letter to humanity. Is what are we capable of? And are there scientific, will there be doctors and PhDs and medical doctors and scientists on my podcast? A few, but it will mostly be people with direct knowing, direct experience of being spirit in a body and their journeys and the messiness of their journey and how it's okay no matter what we choose, but always lacing in with these tools, meat and potato tools that can truly help us to overcome some of our traumas. And a lot of us don't have the money, let alone for, you know, a copay for a psychiatrist, let alone an animal communicator or a healer, you know. And so I'm trying to give a lot of free information, different perspectives about how we can look at ourselves and our looping thoughts and our unresolved memories and patterns and simple things that we can do. Not saying it must be like this because this is how the body works and there's no other way and nobody else can put a thought in your mind. I mean, all those things just aren't true. It's just not true. And science has tried to define what is happening to us. But the fact is, emotions aren't logical. So you can't study them, you know, and you can't analyze them like we want to analyze everything in the Western model of, you know, self-analysis. And consciousness is non-local, so you can't do anything to the brain. Our emotions, literally, and our thoughts are the prescribing doctor, and our brain is the pharmacy. And if we can learn how to control our emotions and our thoughts, or if not control, react to in an appropriate way to shift the chemicals and the hormones that are being produced in our brain, then we can begin to even regain health and balance and wholeness.
That's true. That is so true. In so many ways, you and I, your podcast and what I'm doing with this podcast are very much in sync, because people are learning a lot that they didn't understand before and they're being given choices. And just the information to know that they have a choice, the way they process that their lives and do things that happen to them. It's Ginny, you are an amazing role model for healing, transformation, and rebirth, which is exemplified by your lofty goal to promote interspecies evolution on this planet. Thank you for cultivating a deeper understanding between humans and animals. And thank you from my heart for this incredibly enlightening interview. And that is an understatement. And here is a loving reminder, everyone, that you can see the show notes and all Grief and Rebirth podcast episodes on IreneWeinberg.com. And make sure to follow us and like us on social at Irene S. Weinberg on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And if you're watching here on YouTube, be sure to subscribe below so you'll never miss an episode. And if you'd like to be part of this rebirth series, please send me an email to hello@IreneWeinberg.com. Ginny, thank you again and again. And as I like to say, to be continued. Many blessings, and bye for now.